Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. I'm a coach, a hypnotherapist, and I'm the author of The Anxiety Solution and Brave New Girl. And this podcast is all about helping you to become your calmest, happiest, and most confident self. So today I'm talking to the really incredibly lovely Ali Roth Farah, who is wellness director at Psychology's magazine, where she has interviewed world-renowned spiritual gurus, psychologists, doctors, and wise women and men, including Deepak Chopra, Gabrielle Bernstein, Byron Katie, John Cabot Zinn, and Mastin Kipp. And I absolutely love this conversation with Ali. I learned so much from what she was saying, and it really helped me to think about mindfulness in a different way. So one of the things we talk about is why mindfulness is so much more than being in the moment. And this really shifted things for me. Ali shares her experience of anxiety and panic attacks and how she handles it. And we talk about how we are potentially replacing our inner wisdom and how we can get it back. So I think you're going to love this episode. If you would like some free resources from me, I have some things I'd love to send you to help you on your path to becoming more calm, self-assured and confident. You can head over to karmayou.com/free and enter your details there and I will send you some goodies. You can also find out about my app and my one-on-one sessions of hypnotherapy and coaching at karmayou.com. So let's get into the interview with Ali Roth Farah. Welcome, Ali. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
Good. I'm really good, thank you. The sun's shining and I went for a lovely run today. I don't really like running, but it made it worth it because it wasn't cold for once. And yeah, the cherry blossom and the birds everywhere. And I feel like the birds are getting braver. They're just like flitting around in front of us. So yeah, I've had a really lovely morning so far. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How lovely. Yeah, I'm noticing the birds so much. I don't know if it's just the fact that suddenly it's spring and you hear them again. And suddenly, they are actually louder because no one's going out and the birds are all coming out to play. Who knows?
Maybe that's it. They're taking over again.
Can you share with listeners what it is that you do and a bit about your story of how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, so I've got my finger in a lot of pies, actually. I guess my main role that takes up a great deal of my time is being wellness director at Psychology's magazine. Putting together those pages, doing lots of research and trying out and writing about all of the new kind of wellness trends out there, but also my background really is in psychology. That's what my degree's in. So I'm really fascinated about kind of modern science and psychology and those studies, and then kind of applying them and seeing how they align so amazingly with ancient philosophy. So I've also got I'm a yoga teacher and have all of that kind of background, studying ancient Eastern philosophy in terms of yoga. And then I'm also a mindfulness expert. So yeah, I've done my kind of 2 years plus of training in mindfulness and I've trained under some amazing people, including John Kabat-Zinn. And yeah, so kind of bringing that all together. And from there, I kind of write about all of that stuff. I just wrote my first book this year, well, I wrote it last year, but it came out this year. And then running retreats with my husband, yoga and mindfulness retreats. And yeah, doing lots of different things all the time. So it's quite exciting to kind of have a few different things going on and just seeing where life takes me rather than having this kind of plan, if you like. But yeah, I guess it all began really with Psychology's magazine. And before that, I was working at places like in Vogue House. I was working at GQ for a bit and Easy Living, and mainly in the fashion cupboards, to be honest, and writing about fashion. And then after a while, I began to a couple of seasons and I was like, I'm writing about the same stuff. And, you know, fashion is so exciting because it's art, really, and it's so creative. So I love that side of it. But I got to a point where I thought, you know, there's more that I want to kind of look into. And I had my degree in psychology. And so yeah, this job at Psychology's magazine came up and I'd never really read it before. I picked up the magazine and just thought, God, this is so different to all of the other magazines out there. It's just jam-packed full of interesting things to read, to the point where, you know, most of our readers say, well, I haven't even finished this month's issue and the new one's out. And I've never read a magazine like that before. Usually you just like flick through them, yep, 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 and then you're kind of done in a couple of hours. Whereas Psychology's is something that people hold on to for years and everything's so relevant. You know, you can pick up one from a few years ago and still find things that will help you. And I just loved how positive it was and how it was bringing, you know, modern science and psychology and all of those studies to life through, you know, real life and what was happening in our lives, and we could apply that. And I just loved being a part of that and being able to kind of, yeah, deliver that to the main population. These studies that I read about, you know, that I'd read in university that sound like gobbledygook, and kind of translate them into something that's actually really interesting. So that's where I began. And then, yeah, through there, I you know, interviewing the people I've interviewed, you can't not, you know, try out these things like mindfulness and yeah, interviewing people like Deepak Chopra was what sent me on my path to kind of be enlightened, if you like, and going on retreats and things like that. So yeah, I feel very grateful towards Psychology's magazine to setting me on this path that is very right for me, and from there I have kind of expanded and moved forward. And yeah, I think Psychology's magazine, for anyone who is, you know, looking to understand themselves better, is fantastic because there's so many avenues off of, you know, what they're talking about to go and explore, you know, like hypnotherapy and Reiki, more spiritual things like that, and yoga, and then, you know, very like heavy psychology. It's just very wide ranging and interesting and kind of good to help you find things that you might not have heard of before that you might want to hear.
Amazing. Yeah, I was reading Psychology's magazine. I was having a spa day for my birthday a few weeks ago, and I was reading it, and it really did stand out to me as being so much more positive, empowering, and smart, and not superficial, I suppose. Like, not that there's anything wrong with the occasional bit of superficiality, but it was a lot deeper than a lot of other magazines, and I really appreciated that. I'm really curious about what Deepak said to you. What was that like, and what did he say that made you go on that path to wanting to learn more about mindfulness?
Well, I mean, I've still got the we couldn't keep, just like you and all your podcasts, you know once it's uploaded you've got it there, luckily. But for me and all of the interviews I've done over time, I've had to delete a lot of them because they just take up so much space on your hard drive. But for some reason, I just can't get rid of that one. And I need to listen to it again, actually. It was only really 20 minutes, but I remember coming off the call. I worked from home, so I was in my living room, and I was in my working from home, and I came out of my office into the living room to my husband and just said, I've just had the most amazing experience. Like, it was, you know, I guess a lot of journalists will be, you know, I spoke to, I don't know, Meghan Markle, and wow, it's the highlight of my career. This, I get starstruck over these kind of, you know, these authors and more spiritual people that maybe some people might not have heard of. Obviously, most people have heard of Deepak, but I can't say one, I'll have to listen to it, I'll send it to you maybe. I can't say one thing that I can remember, but I just remember coming off of it, and everything he says is just so profound, and he's so normal. He's talking about how his little grandson had kind of allowed him to see, to be mindful, you know, at the weekend or something with something he was doing. And he was telling us to kind of, his message was like, be a child and see the world through a child's eyes, and going into that, and exactly what his grandson had been talking about. And it was just so lovely. This man who is so, so wise and so educated, so intelligent, has, you know, lived many, many years of practicing what he preaches. And yet he's learning from his grandson. And I just loved that he was so open to that. There was no ego there. Obviously, otherwise he wouldn't be who he is. But yeah, he's just got a really amazing way of speaking and being very inspiring and profound. So yeah, definitely, if you haven't heard of him, his books are incredible. And there's loads of free content out there with him kind of talking. And he's just a very, very knowledgeable and wise human.
Amazing. What about in terms of, so mindfulness for you, what does that mean to you, and how has mindfulness helped you in your life?
So I guess, like, speaking to these experts, I kind of, you can't, and reading studies on it, you can't read the studies, and you know the benefits are amazing, that they're almost too good to be true. And I couldn't read that and think, well, I'm not going to go and try this. So it, you know, I tried it for a few years, and then I kind of realized that there's more to it than we're kind of, it's kind of sold in the media as, and was sold to me as someone in the media and then putting it out there as being in the moment. And it is that, but it's so much more than that as well. It's being, that really is just the practice to help us to learn to be in the now, but really that can only give us so much. So being here and now, I can, you know, appreciate everything that's around me. It allows me to stop worrying about the future, and it allows me to stop regretting the past or fretting over what's happened in the past, and just be here. And usually where we are here is okay. We can, you know, we're here and we're surviving and everything's all right. And that, so that does give us, you know, a certain amount of benefit, but it doesn't, you know, when we just focus on being on the moment, there's so much more to mindfulness than that. And that is kind of limiting. It's, you know, that's what it is. But when we actually do an 8-week course, 8-week mindfulness course, or really start to, you know, read some books on it and practice mindfulness regularly and different kinds of mindfulness meditation. So there's, you know, there's being with the positive, there's loving kindness meditations, which help us connect with everyone in the world and help us kind of cultivate compassion. There's so much more to mindfulness in that being here and now is a practice that allows us to begin to be here and now without feelings. And that's really what mindfulness is. So learning to be here and now without feelings, whether they're good feelings or bad feelings, and just being with them in a non-judgmental way with compassion, that allows us to begin to accept where we are, to accept how we feel. Because at the moment, for example, we're going through as a society, as a planet, a lot of anxiety and bad things that are happening. And there's a lot of, for me especially, I'm sure lots of people will be experiencing this, negative emotions, and they're really difficult to be with. And our natural kind of way of dealing with that is to push them away. I don't want to feel like this. And we push them away, or we ignore them, or we try and distract ourselves with, you know, food or, you know, whatever it is, whatever our vice is. But that doesn't mean that that negative emotion goes away. It often just screams louder at us. And that can be a really difficult place to live. And many of us are living our lives like that on a daily basis for our whole lives. So for me, the revelation was that yes, this negative emotion is here, but also there's some positive emotions, or there's, you know, there's a negative situation, but also there's some positive situations that I'm living in. And if I can just allow them, through noticing them, through mindful awareness, if I can allow them to be here, to just be here, then they stop screaming so loud. And if I can hold them in a kind of container of awareness together, then I can begin to accept that they're there. And that's how we find peace. So acceptance, accepting that bad things are happening, not meaning that, you know, it's okay or that we should allow things to continue. If we can change and improve them, of course. But you know, we need a mindful awareness to help us notice that they're there and notice how we can change them. So that helps as well. But yeah, to accept that yesterday I'm feeling anxious, or yes, I've just had a 25% pay cut, which is happening to a lot of people. Yes, that's happened. I can't do anything to change that. So beating myself up more and putting layers and layers and layers and layers of catastrophizing on top of that one problem isn't going to make me feel any better. But if I can look at that and go, yep, that's rubbish, and it's there, and just allow it to be there, then it almost begins to shrink because we've placed our awareness onto it, which is all it wants from us. And we can just allow it to sit there. And mindfulness also allows us to see that, you know, through being aware of being in the moment, we can see that, you know, one day we feel good, one day we feel bad, one day the sun is shining, one day it's raining. And we can begin to see over time that life kind of does this, but it's always moving. It's always, you know, it's transient, and we might feel bad one day, but we'll feel good another day. And that is part of acceptance as well. So yeah, I know I've rambled there, but because I'm very passionate about it, but in a nutshell, mindfulness really is about, for me, is about acceptance, and acceptance leads to peace.
Please don't apologize, because that is so powerful. And if we could really absorb that and be able to have this sense of accepting our feelings, mm-hmm. and not beating ourselves up about how we're feeling, or making it worse by making ourselves wrong or pushing it away,
yes.
that would be huge for us. That would be like the most life-changing thing ever. So
well, thank you. And that's really given me a different perspective on mindfulness, and really that's such a good reminder to me as well, to really have that acceptance and that holding of all the emotions. Is really, really powerful. Now, your new book is called The Wellfulness Project, which I loved, by the way. I have it on Kindle, and it's such a lovely book, really practical, loads of inspiring stories. I also love the fact that in the Kindle version, it has illustrations in it and pictures, which is quite rare for a Kindle book.
Because it's quite a visual book in terms of a couple of the tools that we use, and you have to kind of, it's really difficult to explain. So yeah, when I was recording it, I had so much fun recording it. That's when it felt like a real book to me. I was like, oh my God, I get to record it on Audible, for Audible. So going to the studio was really fun. And I got there and I was like, how are we gonna do this? And they're like, oh, don't worry, they've got PDFs. And I was like, that's so clever, I've never seen that. So yeah, that was exciting.
Brilliant. What is wellfulness? How would you describe what that is exactly?
Well, I made up the word, so I think it's good to that I get the chance to explain what it is. So it's basically applying mindful awareness to the wellness practices that we follow. And I've kind of, you know, when we think about wellness, it's often quite easy to think, oh, you know, about diet and exercise. But for me, wellness is holistic, and so it encompasses, of course, our diet and the way we move, but also encompasses the way that we think about our body, so body image, and then space. So those spaces that we spend our time in, obviously we're all spending a lot of time at home at the moment, and perhaps becoming more aware of how spaces make us feel, and missing spaces that we used to spend time in. So like I love to work in cafes. If I'm feeling a certain way, then I can get a real like energy off of working in a cafe. And so yeah, really kind of being mindful and noticing how different spaces make us feel. Equally, people, how people make us feel, that we either have to be around or choose to be around. And then the routines and the rituals that we follow, how going to bed, for example, can become for many of us a kind of mindless routine that just kind of appeared out of habit, rather than paying conscious awareness to that routine and really thinking about how it makes us feel and how it serves us. And then finally, mind and the way that we think about things. Again, it can be our thoughts. If we just, you know, we are not our minds, our minds are thinking machines. And if we just allow them to run the show, then, you know, we could end up thinking about things in a way that don't really serve us, you know, and nourish the way who we are and what we want to achieve. So yeah, wellfulness is applying mindful awareness, noticing how the things we do make us feel, and from there we gain power, because we can either we can either choose to keep something in our life and know that it's there to stay, and that there's a reason for it being there. For example, a yoga practice, yep, that really serves me, and on a holistic level it serves me and it works for me, so I'm going to keep that. But running, that I drag myself out to do every single day, I don't enjoy it in any level. It doesn't really do much for my body, and it doesn't make my heart sing, and makes me really bored as well. So why am I doing that? Can I replace that with something that does serve me on a holistic level? So yeah, I think it's empowering ourselves really to really look at our lives and consider through mindful awareness whether we have things in place that are there because we want them and we've chosen them, or if they're there just because they kind of appeared because it's what Sally down the road was doing, or what thing you told me to do on a podcast, and it doesn't actually work for me anyway, so why am I wasting my time? So yeah, that's
That makes so much sense. And yeah, I really like what you do in the book. It's almost like going through different parts of your life and auditing them and just saying, right, is this working for me? How can I bring more awareness to this area? What can I change? And loads of kind of inspiration and ideas around that. I know that you've spoken about your own experiences with anxiety. And, you know, I've seen things that you posted on your Instagram and that sort of thing. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you manage that yourself, and yeah, what advice you would give, I suppose, for other people who are experiencing anxiety?
Yeah, thank you. Do you know what? In the past, I've had kind of low level anxiety, especially in terms of not feeling good enough and definite negative thought patterns going on in my head, critical in a kind of narrative going on. But it's only really in the past year have I experienced anxiety that has been crippling and has actually really, really profoundly affected my life. And that began to appear as panic attacks. And that was really difficult for me as someone who had done so much work and, you know, does yoga and teaches yoga, who writes about wellness, who practices mindfulness every day, to suddenly have this anxiety which almost felt like it appeared from nowhere, and, you know, started showing up in this really physical way. It was really scary, and for a long time I didn't understand how I was feeling. I actually just felt numb. That's almost how my anxiety began to manifest, is just numbness, not feeling sad, but also not feeling happy, not being able to be excited about anything. Even friends' weddings, I used to get, you know, oh my God, I can't wait. It's going to be wonderful to see everyone. I'm going to have a dance and how lovely. And it's not that I wasn't looking forward to it, or that I, you know, didn't have a nice time when I was there, but I just couldn't access like that joy that I used to be able to kind of, that would just come naturally. And that for me was the kind of warning flag. And then that began to lead to just wanting to spend a lot of time alone and needing to be at home a lot and just very quiet. Noises started to really kind of affect me. So like my first panic attack was in the car with my husband singing along to the radio, and the radio was on really loud and he was clapping, and it was just so much. And I think like being in the confines of the car and everything that was going on in my head, that triggered my first panic attack. So yeah, noise really weirdly kind of started to become a thing for me. And I think that was when I realized, that first panic attack, I'd never had one before. And I'd been with people who had, I'd helped people who had had them through mindfulness. But yeah, they show up very differently for different people, I think. And I don't even think my husband really realized that I was having one. But it was scary. And that's when I realized I think that something was really seriously wrong. And I confided in a friend, and that kind of brought everything just crashing down around me, just almost admitting it to myself and to other people. And I realize now that, and it's very easy to do the, to do this up, to kind of realize afterwards that, you know, in hindsight, I put a lot of guilt and shame on myself as someone who kind of was, had been there for other people in the past dealing with anxiety and mental health issues, that now I was having a mental health issue and dealing with anxiety on a like large, on a big level. And that was really difficult for me to honestly to kind of admit to myself and to other people. And I felt like a bit of a fraud, to be honest. So the panic attacks lasted for a few months quite severely. That, you know, I'd have one night I had three in a row, just relentless, and they were exhausting. But I realized that I weirdly found it actually very difficult to meditate at that time, because just being with those intense thoughts is very, very hard to do. So I kind of found myself moving away from those things that I'd done in the past to support myself, yoga, mindfulness and meditation, and just needing to just be a bit more, to just be at home, do normal things, and kind of lose myself in just, you know, day-to-day tasks. And just, I guess that really, that is the practice of compassion, and just not putting too much pressure on myself to feel like, right, well, I'm going to meditate 5 hours every day because I'm feeling anxious. For me at that time, that wasn't the kindest thing to do, and it wasn't helping me. But one thing I did start, which I'd never done before, was start going to counselling, and that really, really helped me. And she helped kind of help me reflect on some things that I was doing, and which one of them was putting a lot of pressure on myself in every area of life. And I think a lot of us who, you know, I don't know whether you're freelancer, all of us really, we're living in an age of kind of, you know, we're all striving for success and greatness and striving to lead extraordinary lives. And that can also lead to putting a lot of pressure on ourselves. And one thing she taught me that has stayed with me is, trying to remember how she phrased it. It's not a demand, it's a strong preference. And that really helped me kind of start to navigate through life and take some of the pressures off. And yeah, gradually, week by week, I started to feel a bit better and understand myself on a deeper level, and understand my anxiety on a deeper level and where it was coming from. And then after a few weeks of therapy, I managed to want to and feel as if I was able to get back into yoga a bit and get back into meditation. And now, honestly, I feel like my anxiety and those panic attacks were one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given, because it not only allowed me to really fully understand how severe anxiety can be in terms of like a physical reaction and how it can manifest, and you know, bring that into my teaching and my understanding, my empathy, but also it's allowed me to understand myself, and it's given me resilience. You know, I've managed to move through that, and it, you know, at this moment we're going through the coronavirus pandemic, which is extremely anxiety provoking for many of us, and I feel like got tools with it. And I did have a panic attack when this all started again, which, you know, I had to check myself and say, you know, don't put shame on yourself for having a panic attack again. This is completely normal, and it's okay that this is coming up again for you. But I managed to snap myself, you know, back into me a lot quicker, because I'd been through it before. So I think it's really powerful, and I've read so many kind of like first-hand experiences and spoken to so many people that who have come through anxiety, and are still, you know, like I'm still living with it. I think most of us are still living with it. Hopefully it's reduced a bit, but to, you know, most of us can see afterwards. It's very difficult in the moment. So again, like compassion, not putting pressure on ourselves to suddenly feel like this, but yeah, anxiety can empower us and can make us stronger and can give us an experience that, you know, serves us in a kind of strange way. And I'm actually very grateful for it, because it's, yeah, if anything, it's just enhanced my compassion so much more. And that's really an important kind of value for me.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm sure lots of people listening can relate to that. And I certainly can, that sense of, you know, how often we beat ourselves up about how we're feeling and make ourselves wrong, or there's shame that we we feel about the fact that we're struggling, and actually how important it is just to have that compassion and know that if you're feeling anxious, it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. You know, life is, you know, challenging. We are here to learn, and you know, how is that going to teach us, you know, to learn about ourselves or to adjust what we're doing. And actually, for people that are maybe really struggling right now, you know, are you going to learn something really valuable from this? It's going to help you to come out stronger the other side, or be able to help other people, or, you know, learn about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you know, could it be that anxiety is actually our superpower?
I love that idea. I love that idea. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'll go with that. I'll go with that. I believe that. I wanted to ask you about something that I read in your book. You wrote about, are we replacing our inner wisdom? And around the fact that we are losing touch with that instinctiveness or that inner wisdom, or whatever you want to call it. Can you speak a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah, so I feel quite passionately about this. I think I got my book here. I can't remember exactly how I phrased it, but it's almost like we're kind of replacing inner wisdom with the wisdom in our pocket. And by that, I mean our phones. So, and it's not just our phones, but I mean, you know, if we have a question, we consult our phone. How, you know, say for example, you keep feeling thirsty. The natural thing for us to do nowadays is Google it. Why do I keep feeling thirsty? And, you know, we're just bombarded with information. There's so much out there. So whether it's, you know, we're just walking down the street and someone's reading a newspaper and there's an advert there, or it's on the tube or on the side of a bus, or, you know, in the magazine that we're reading, there's so much information out there, and that's just passive information, let alone the information that we're kind of seeking. So say for example, I want to I don't know, boost my immunity. I can go online and I can find anything for free to help me learn about, you know, what I can do to boost my immunity. And all of that information is very valuable, and it's, you know, it's important. It's not that isn't you know, something that we should seek. But for me, I think we're losing, where there is all of this free information, we're losing touch with the information inside of us. So the information out there is kind of, that's knowledge. So it's, yeah, information, knowledge. Whereas the information inside of us is wisdom. And we so rarely consult that wisdom. And it might not be able to tell us exactly the same things as, you know, my body might not be able to, or looking within and meditating on, you know, how to boost my immune system. I'm not going to get the exact same answers, obviously, as if I Google it. But what I can do is start to take that information and consult with myself and ask myself, okay, well, what does my body say about that? So say I take, this is a great example. I'm in my mid-30s, coming up to my mid-30s, and I've got really dark hair. So I noticed about 6 months ago that I had a couple of greys coming through the front, and I thought, oh my god, I don't want to go grey, you know, like we all do. There's nothing going wrong with going grey, and that's just like my immediate kind of reaction. And it was a reaction, it wasn't a response, another mindfulness technique. But I thought, well, okay, what am I going to do about this? I'm going to learn how to support my body. So I Googled it, Ayurvedic ways to deal with grey hair or whatever. And it came up, the Ayurvedic medicine for it is to take copper tablets. So I ordered the copper tablets, they came. And I took one the first day, and afterwards I felt a bit sick. I thought, oh God, I don't feel that great. I didn't like connect the two. The next day I took the tablet, rushed straight to the toilet and threw it back up again. My body, that inner knowledge, that inner wisdom was saying, nope, this copper tablet is not for you. This doesn't work. I don't want this in me. I'm letting go of it. But it took me 2 days to kind of figure that out, and this very physical reaction. And I just had such empathy for my body in that moment, because it tried to tell me the day before, like, didn't feel that good. This doesn't feel that great. But I didn't listen. And I think it's that, you know, we can take the information that we find out there, but if we're not looking within and asking within ourselves, how does this work for me? Is this working for me? Then we could be doing so many things, whether that's just, you know, doing something that's actually detrimental to our health. Like if I'd carried on taking the copper tablet, to throw it up every day is not a good thing. You know, that can't be good for you. And equally, whether it's just doing things that don't work for us and we're just wasting our time and money on them. I would love to see us start to consult ourselves as much as we consult our phones and the information and the knowledge that's out there. If we can combine the two, then that gives us so much power, because we've got that wonderful knowledge that other people are kind of researching and discovering and creating out there, but then we're also applying it to ourselves and our own unique needs, because we are all unique. There is no one size fits all for fitness and health and well-being. If there was, then, you know, we wouldn't need all of these websites. We wouldn't, you know, there'd be no advertising. There would just be a prescription, like, here you go, this is what you need to do. But it doesn't work like that. You know, there is, if it was that easy, there would be no obesity, there'd be no, you know, diabetes and stuff from eating unhealthily. It isn't as simple as that, but we all are unique and we all have different needs and also different interests, you know. So to be running, for example, where I live, it's Greenwich, so we get the London Marathon starts here every year, and we get running fever. There's everyone is running in the streets, and afterwards everyone's like, I'm going to run the marathon this year. And I used to sign, you know, buy into that and take myself out running, but I don't enjoy it, and it wasn't doing any. I'd never see any results from my fitness, mainly because it wasn't enjoyable to me. So I'd find it boring and stop before I ever got to a point where my fitness would improve. So, you know, for us to kind of create a healthy lifestyle and a lifestyle of well-being, we have to do things that not only work for us on a kind of, you know, information level, like running will be good for your heart, for example. We also have to ask ourselves, well, do I enjoy running? Do I find it interesting? And, you know, do I get really bored when I'm doing it? Does it keep me interested enough to keep doing it? And also, do I enjoy it in terms of my heart, and does it make my heart sing? And I think if we can find things that support our body, support our mind, and support our heart, then we've got a lot, a much greater chance of building a life full of things that are going to be easy for us to follow, that work for us, and that, you know, last a lifetime, because they don't feel like hard work, you know? And we can only do that by looking within and consulting at that inner wisdom and asking ourselves, well, how does this make me feel? And that, again, is wellfulness. It's applying mindful awareness to the things that we do and deciding whether they work for us.
That's so important, I think. And just knowing, you know, so many of my clients and people that I work with who will always be asking other people's opinions about things, or needing to research things to the nth degree, and looking outside of ourselves for the answers, or what we should be doing, or what will help us. And actually we're not listening to the best resource that we have, you know, tapping into that inner wisdom and that part of us that knows what's best for us and knows really what's right and what we like and what we don't like.
Yeah,
we hope people can really start to tune into that more after hearing you speak about that.
I think it's about permission too, you know. I think we've been conditioned to, you know, if something hurts, we go to the doctor and the doctor tells us, you know, what to do, and we do it. So especially, you know, like my parents' generation, if the doctor prescribes tablets, they'll take them, because the doctor, you know, it's like this voice of authority has said to do this. And obviously, you know, that is important, but at the same time, I think we're almost allowing other people to make decisions for us in every area of life. And, you know, when we start to look within, we also start to give ourselves permission to say, do you know what, I don't like running, so I'm not going to. Isn't that, I get goosebumps whenever I think of that. Like, it's my life and I can do it or not do it, you know, and listening to myself and deciding for myself what works for me. And that might change over time. You know, in 10 years' time, I might love running, and that's okay as well. So to constantly listen to ourselves and allow ourselves to change and give ourselves the permission to do that, I think is a very loving thing.
Yeah, it's very empowering. I like that a lot. I wanted to ask you about success anxiety.
Yeah.
Because this is a thing, isn't it? It's a thing. Not many people know it's a thing, but it's definitely a thing.
It's a thing. Oh my God, I've done quite a lot of research into generations around success anxiety as well. And that, I think that's really fascinating. I think our generation is very much crippled by it, because I don't know if you've ever read anything or listened to Simon Sinek, but he, if you're interested in this, he's a really great person to kind of look into. This idea that, you know, we've kind of been told that we can be anything. And yeah, we can, but also we can't. And I think it's almost crippling, this idea of needing to be successful. And the thing is, the goalposts are always moving. So once we achieve one goal, I found anyway that I hadn't even got to that goal before I was planning the next one. And that's, you know, it's very much the opposite of being mindful, because it's constantly doing, striving, and never actually allowing ourselves to be here and now and just enjoy what's happening in our lives at the moment. I think it's very easy to kind of look to the future a lot and need to have that goal in sight. And of course, that's such a big part of life, and it's, you know, it helps us. It's given me so much happiness and, you know, got me to where I am today. But if that's everything for us, this, you know, need to be successful, it can be crippling, because where does it end? You know, this like ladder that we're climbing, and there's never any end to it, because, yeah, as I said, the goalposts are always moving. And again, I think it comes back to looking within and saying, well, am I happy right now? Am I here? Do I need that next promotion? If I'm earning enough money to do the things that I want to do, if I'm enjoying my work, maybe if I don't go for that promotion, then I can do something else on the side that I love, or I can, you know, take up a hobby or something and live a bit more in enjoying the now, you know? But yeah, I think for our generation, especially, I've spoken to so many friends who've got to their kind of late 20s, early 30s and thought, oh my God, I'm exhausted. And a couple of my friends, weirdly, have kind of just quit their job and just gone and got, you know, something, either brought their existing job down a couple of days so that they've inverted their week. So they've got like a 3-day week and a 4-day weekend, which I think is amazing.
That sounds ideal.
Doesn't it? So yeah, they're kind of put, like, they're not earning a ton of money, they've got enough to get, you know, do what they want to do, and they have kind of put, obviously, like, their a lot of their goals on hold, but they realize that they're happy where they are, and that actually, you know, all of this striving doesn't bring them as much happiness as it once did or as they thought it would. And so they're able to now kind of enjoy the here and now a bit more. And then I've got a few friends who have also kind of, you know, quit their, that like climbing of the ladder and got a job doing something, you know, admin or a PA. And obviously, though, it's difficult because those jobs can also be very, you know, on that career ladder climbing, but something that is not so demanding responsibility wise, that they are, you know, they'll go into the office and work from 9 to 5 and they take the hours lunch break and then they go home and then they don't think about work anymore. And again, I think that's really empowering. Like, wow, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, I don't know, reading your emails at the weekend or at 8 o'clock at night, and they're enjoying life now a lot more. But, you know, again, it all comes back to looking within and asking yourself, well, what do I need and what are my values? What's serving me in my body, mind and heart? And yeah, that might be a reevaluation and changing. And again, it's okay to change your mind. You know, there was a time where I wanted to be a magazine editor, and now I know that that's probably not where life is taking me. And because, number one, of some of the decisions that I'm making, but yeah, do I want that anymore? And it's something that I'll probably, you know, keep asking myself over time. So I think it's important to check in with through mindfulness and mindful awareness, not just in the moment, like, oh, what's happening with the birds and what can I hear, but what's happening inside? What is my heart telling me? Do I enjoy this still? Do I, you know, how do I feel in my body? Am I exhausted when the weekend comes because I'm working so hard in the week? And starting to listen to what we want and what we need on a deeper level, and not just, you know, looking outside of ourselves and seeing what other people are doing and thinking, well, I need to do that because my friend's doing it. You know, just because they are doing that, it doesn't mean that it's right for you. And it doesn't always mean it's right for them either.
Totally. Yeah. And going back to what you said about this message, I think that was sent that you can do anything, almost like anyone can be a pop star, anyone can be a millionaire. And that is, you know, on lots of levels, it's amazing to yeah. give ourselves permission to do that and to go after yeah. what we want to do. But at the same time, if you want a simpler life, or if you try to, I don't know, make it in the music industry and it doesn't happen, then you can be left with this real sense of failure because you've mm-hmm. been told that it's possible, but then it can't obviously be possible for everyone to be a millionaire and everyone to be yeah. a pop star. So yeah, I think it's about finding that balance between, yes, go for your dreams, but yeah. also know that you're valuable, you know, no matter what. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I try and think of it like any kind of success is just a bonus, because actually I've got everything I need and I'm okay. Even if I did nothing all day, I'd yeah. still be okay. And that's how I try, yeah. and try and rationalize it myself.
Yeah, and there is more to life than promotions and, you know, book deals, although that's brought me so much happiness. It's also, yeah, just, I'm sure you felt the same when your book came out. It, you know, this dream of having my name on a book was like a bucket list thing, and to hold it in my hands, I will be forever grateful for the opportunity, and forever, you know, on my deathbed, I know that this is something that I will, you know, cherish forever. But it also came with a lot of success anxiety, because what if it crashes? What if no one buys it? You know, and all of these catastrophizing thoughts come into play. And, you know, in a way, I've had to be very, very mindful around that, because it could ruin the whole experience, you know, just worrying about how well it's going to do and whether, you know, whether I'll get my second book deal. And rather than thinking, well, did I enjoy that? You know, it's fantastic, but do I want to do another one? And, you know, I loved it, and I think I do want, I would love to write another one, but not if I ruin it for myself by placing, you know, everything about this book on success and how well it does in the shops, because that's not the only thing that it's about. It's mainly the reason why I wanted to write it was to share what I had inside and to hopefully, you know, allow other people to read it and take it in and think, yeah, what do I think about that, and apply it in their lives. And that's the most important thing. So I think it can be, I went to India earlier this year, and one thing that I learned over there was that they do everything with love, you know. So doing a massage, they put all of their love and energy into it, not because they want to be like a famous masseuse or, you know, get paid the most amount of money. That's the ethos, is do everything love. And I think that can be a really good thing to kind of shift our focus onto, away from success. And as you say, like every success that comes from doing everything with love is a bonus, but really it's the doing everything with love. It's the thinking about, like, the love that I poured into this book is the thing that makes me happy and the thing that makes me proud and, you know, fills my heart with joy, versus I sold 1,000 copies this week. You know, it's a very different feeling, very different feeling. So that would be a huge bonus, but it's not the only thing that exists out there.
Yeah, totally. That's such a beautiful idea. I really appreciate that. And yeah, I think there's something about, you know, enjoying, it's such a cliche, but enjoying the journey, enjoying the ride. You know, if having a book out might be nice, but if you hate writing it and it ruins your life for the 9 months that you're writing it, then maybe it's not so, well, it probably still would be worth it actually, but yeah, we need to enjoy the ride and make sure we're enjoying it, not just reaching a goal, because sometimes the goals are not as satisfying when we achieve them.
Yeah,
because actually we might have that mindset, and so many people do, that we just go on to the next goal or what's the next thing, and actually enjoy the ride and appreciate things when we've got it, but also know that it's not the be all and end all.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing. I think we're running out of time, but I've loved everything that you've shared so much. I can't wait to listen back to this episode when I'm editing it. Can you share a little bit about where people can find out more about you, where they can buy your book and anything else that you're up to?
Yeah, I'd love to. So obviously the book is called The Wellfulness Project, A Manual for Mindful Living, and it's out now. So it's on Amazon, Waterstones, when all the shops open, it'll be available in the shops again. But yeah, you can order it online. And then my website is www.aliroff.com, aliroff.com. And then obviously you can find all my writings on wellness in Psychologies magazine, which is out every month. So yeah, and still in the shops and stuff at the moment, and you can buy that online as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you so much, Chloe. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope that you gained a lot from this episode. Come on over to Instagram and let me know, what are you taking from this episode? Find me at Chloe Brotheridge. And I would love it if you would leave me a review in the podcast app or in iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, leave me a rating. And is there someone in your life that would really benefit from this podcast? You can let them know by sharing this podcast. I'd be so, so grateful. So I'm just wishing you a wonderful week ahead, sending you loads of love. Hopefully you'll tune in again, and I'll see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.